Hello, I'm Zol Patek-Fulvey. This is number 0166, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
There, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0166. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Fabien Rigel, who is the founder of Future Cinema and Secret Swimming. They have secret film showings in the UK. They are also into secret skinny dipping events.
This was just something that I set up, and it was very much an afternoon of swimming. And then I put a Facebook group together, and within an hour, we had, I think, something like 1,000 fans. And the concept was just a group of people meet up, secret place, go on a journey, perhaps through a wood, find a lake, and go swimming. And for the first time, we thought, well, if we're going to do this, let's make it skinny dipping, because that's even more adventurous. And then suddenly, we got 250 people or something like this to swim naked as part of this festival for the launch.
Dr. Alex Hills is the author of Wi-Fi and the Bad Boys of Radio. He's also one of the creators of Wi-Fi. His team of scientists created the communications technology because they just simply needed to communicate with each other.
We had some researchers who needed a small wireless network for their work, and so that was what led us to put that very first network together. Later on, we discovered that we were onto something pretty big.
Stuart Nolman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nolman, and Book Banter goes to the Gridiron, the Pro Football Hall of Fame 50th anniversary book, and two Gridiron classics that you can take with you to the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. So join the huddle here on the Stuff File program. Hi.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you that this was show number 0166, was Zol Patek-Fulvey, a very dear friend and a freelance director. We worked together for years and years and years. You could also find him at Dépanneur Chicoin, which is in Vaudreuil-Dorion, and I thank you very, very much, Zol, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? On a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, you know, there are people out there who will never take responsibility for their own lives or the lives of their offspring. A 14-year-old boy was hospitalized in critical condition in Churchill, Pennsylvania in August after allegedly swiping a Jeep Cherokee, a Grand Cherokee, and leading the owner's boyfriend on a high-speed chase, albeit brief, before rolling the Cherokee over on Interstate 376. The boy's mother blamed the Cherokee's owner. A vehicle with the keys in it, she said, was an opportunity that, in a 14-year-old's eyes, was the perfect moment. Also, she said, the boyfriend had no right to chase my son. Okay, I kind of agree with that latter part, but anyway. The boy could have just wanted a joyride down the street. Maybe he merely wanted to go farther than he felt like walking. That's a direct quote from the mom. Yes. Mom, that's exactly the great parenting skills we look forward to hearing from you. Anyone surprised her child is a delinquent? Anyone? Anyone? Bueller. Moving right along, that's not the only case where people, for one reason or another, just can't seem to help themselves. As a matter of fact, I have a couple more stories here of people who just can't help themselves. Number one, David Thompson, age 27, was arrested in August and charged with stealing a bag of marijuana from the Charleroi, Pennsylvania Regional Police Station. Now, while talking to an officer about an unrelated case, Thompson noticed an evidence bag on a counter and swiped it. Caught moments later, Thompson profusely apologized, telling the officer, "I just couldn't help myself. That bud smells so good." And story number two, Aaron Morris was charged in August with battery in North Lauderdale, Florida, for groping the buttocks of a woman at a Walmart. And as you know, if you listen to the show long enough, everything seems to happen at Walmart. Now, according to the arresting officer, Morris explained, "Her booty looked so good. I just couldn't resist touching it." Yeah. Let's hope in both of these cases, these guys don't end up with cellmates who just can't help themselves. That's all I'm saying. Okay, I got a couple of stories here that could only come under the headline of ironies. First up, arrested in September and charged with aggravated indecent exposure, making continued obscene gestures to female kayakers on Michigan's Pinnebog River while nude, was 60-year-old TV producer William H. Masters III. Name sound familiar? He's the son of Pioneer's 1960s sex researcher William Masters, who, with Virginia Johnson, wrote the landmark books Human Sexual Response and Human Sexual Inadequacy. And in August, the Consumer Product Safety Commission and the Gerber Legendary Blades Company in Portland, Oregon, announced a recall of Gerber machetes. According to the CPSC, the machetes might have a defect that could cause the handle to break, making the machete, according to CPSC spokespeople, a, quote, laceration hazard. Okay, when is a machete not a laceration hazard? Maybe I should ask that question of Bob DiRigo Jones of Let's Be Fair, which reminds me, that comes your way later in the show. And okay, one more story before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. There are over 300 million people in the United States, but I sometimes get the feeling that they're running out of people to vote for. How else would you explain some of the candidates who are running for public office? I have three very challenging races to tell you about. Number one. Richard Wagner Jones, running for a school board seat in Granite, Utah, told reporters in June that since the job is mainly about taxes and budgets, he would not have to make site visits to schools. That's fortunate because Jones is barred from schools as a registered sex offender based on a 1990 conviction. Number two, Mike Rios, a former school board member in Moreno Valley, California, said in August that he was still considering running for the town's council despite his March arrest for attempted murder and April arrest for pimping, allegedly caught with several underage recruits. And if you're out there thinking, you know, boys will be boys, well, wait, here's number three. Verna Jackson Hammonds said in August that her candidacy for mayor of Cullman, Alabama, should not suffer by her having appeared 10 years earlier as the other woman in a love triangle episode of The Jerry Springer Show. I just have to ask the question, how low would your self-esteem become if you ran against one of these three and lost? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest on the Stuff File program, shall we? Fabien Rigol is the founder of Future Cinema, a growing community of cinema lovers in the UK. He is also the man behind Secret Swimming, which gathers together an extremely large group of skinny dippers. Fabien joins us from London to talk about both entities in his most interesting endeavors. Hi, Fabien. Thanks for being on the program with us. So first I want to talk a little bit about Secret Cinema because you have a big event coming up, correct?
That's right. We're actually in the I'm in the building right now. We're launching the next Secret Cinema in a few weeks on Halloween, actually.
What exactly is Secret Cinema?
Secret Cinema is an experience in which the audience don't know where they're going to see a film. And instead of just watching a film, we take over buildings and transform those buildings into a film. So it's almost like they stepped inside a film. So it's a combination of theatre and cinema mixed in with a little bit of, I guess, the sense of a happening where people come together and feel part of something.
What type of films do you show?
We have shown, this is going to be our 19th production, but it's really quite varied. So we launched with Gus Van Sant's Paranoid Park, but we've done films like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Lawrence of Arabia, Blade Runner. Most recently we did Prometheus. It's a real mixture of different films.
How did you come up with this idea, or who came up with this idea?
I came up with this idea really, I guess, I'm very passionate about cinema, and as a child I used to watch films and almost feel like I was inside them. And I think where cinema has moved to in terms of the commercial side and the kind of the Hollywood staple of films that get released, I feel that the magic and the romance to cinema has gone a little bit. And the idea was creating these events in unusual spaces, but it's sort of taken a step further that what if you could live inside a film? What if for an evening you could be transported into the world of a film and then watch the film inside the film and your eyes open to a new way of watching a film? So yeah, it was a combination of going to lots of festivals, combination of the old days where you used to go to raves where people didn't know where they were going, but they would meet up, and a combination of just feeling like the world has become too formula, too dull, and you know everything needs to be disrupted.
Now, I'm assuming that certain films allow themselves better to this experience than others. Have you had any feedback from, say, filmmakers who find your concept interesting?
Yes, Terry Gilliam came to the last production, and obviously we've done films with Ridley Scott. And what Terry Gilliam said, he actually did a little review of it. Was it reminded him of the happenings of the '60s, and it reminded him of these kind of, you know, where cinema perhaps once was. And in terms of where cinema could go, and in terms of the idea of talking to a filmmaker about maybe, perhaps if they make a film, that they would bear in mind the idea of exhibiting it in this new way and what that could mean. And I think what that could mean is that you could essentially write a script with this in mind, that you would essentially have the same cast, the same props, the same building, and you would screen the film inside the set where it was shot with the same actors surrounding you. It could become a very interesting experience.
Wow. Now, your next event is coming up in the UK on Halloween, as you say, but you don't only do this in the UK, correct?
No. I mean, Future Cinema has different strands, and we have Future Shorts, which is a short film festival that takes place around the world, and then we have we've set up Future Cinema events in Berlin and New York, but Secret Cinema has taken place. We've only done it in the UK, but we've done it in four cities across the UK. But next year we're launching it globally, and we've sort of been preparing for that. So we're taking it to New York, and we're taking it to. But the concept of Secret Cinema is a big sort of circus of cinema. It's a big carnival. It's a very big production. It's a huge undertaking. But what I'm kind of interested in is, you know, opening it up to folk around the world who want to get involved and change. The great thing about, I think, what we've achieved is that we can get 25,000 people to come to a film without knowing what it is. What could that mean in terms of how film could be distributed? You know, so that the filmmakers themselves get the widest possible distribution. That's what interesting for me.
Sounds very interesting indeed. Now, I mentioned the other entity, which I got to admit is the one that drew me to you in the first place, because I saw a news article on it, and that is Secret Swimming. Now, what exactly is that? I'll let you explain it.
Okay, so Secret Swimming essentially is, I mean, I'm a keen swimmer, and I love to swim in wild, you know, I guess in, you know, rivers and ponds and various places, and swimming kind of keeps me sane, you know. If you can call me sane at all, but it's one of those things in which, you know, and I guess I just, what I feel that we have now is a community of people that come together for these film experiences, and, you know, but those people also love lots of things, you know, whether it's, you know, music or fashion or other areas. So, you know, this was just something that I set up, and it was very much an afternoon of swimming, and then I put a Facebook group together, and within an hour, we had, I think, something like 1,000 fans. And the concept was just group of people, meet up, secret place, go on a journey, perhaps through a wood, find a lake, and go swimming. And for the first time, we thought, well, if we're going to do this, let's make it skinny dipping, because that's even more adventurous. And then suddenly, we got 250 people or something like this to swim naked as part of this festival for the launch. But then we opened up the idea to people around them. Did the same thing, their shots, and everyone was naked. And now everyone wants to to stay naked, but it's not just about the nakedness. It's about the sense of freedom that you get with swimming in wild places. And also, it gets back to my original thing, which is that I believe that the world, you know, I just get bored with the kind of formula, safe, everything's sort of organized, and the spontaneous nature of life and all the rest of it, you know, it's an adventure. And I think people, actually, above all, it's about people coming together to do adventure. And I think people are quite disconnected, spend most of their time on Facebook, you know, rather than actually meet each other and, you know, say hello. So it's a combination of things. And also, swimming is pretty cinematic, so I'm interested in how we could perhaps, you know, create some performances. And so we have musicians come and play at these gatherings, and who knows, maybe they could swim and then there'd be a screen and they could watch a movie.
Now, when I originally saw the story, the idea, I mean, on its own sounded rather interesting. But you were also attempting, if I'm not mistaken, to break a skinny dipping record. First of all, I didn't know one existed in the first place. And second, how many do you need to break the record, and did you do it?
We actually, the record was held by the Welsh. I think they got 430 people or something like this to swim naked on a beach in Wales. But no, we did, I think, something in the region of 230, something like this, a wilderness. But that's in one place. But if we added up all of our people, we would have broken the record. But in one location. But yeah, so we didn't actually break the record, but I believe we could, and I think we're going to try again to do it. I just think if you could create it sounds insane, but I was thinking if you get 1 million people to swim naked on the same day around the world, then maybe, you know, there'd be world peace. No, I'm really kidding. But you know what I mean? It would just be a nice thing to get, you know, lots of people naked.
More power to you if you can get that done. It sounds like an interesting endeavor indeed. Now, people can find out more information about all of this, I understand, by going to the website. The website is, it's secretcinema.org. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Secretcinema.org, or they can go to futureshorts.com if they're interested in hosting the film festival, or they can go to futurecinema.co.uk as well.
Okay.
All through Facebook and Twitter.
Excellent. I got to ask one more skinny dipping question. What time of the year do you do this? Because, you know, there are certain times of the year where it's kind of cold, and if you've ever seen the Seinfeld episode, there's always a concern about, well, shrinkage.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's, we are aiming to do it every month of the year, but during the winter months, we're thinking we might ask people to bring, you know, bathing costumes, so to avoid that. But this actually, the launch happened, it's not just primarily a skinny dip. We don't want to just say it's just skinny dip. And for those that feel free to do that, that's great. For those that don't, it's totally cool too, as long as you get in the water and don't just sit on the bank. So it's summer for the skinny dip, definitely.
And you also sometimes show a film there too, you say?
No, but that's an idea that we're thinking about. We wanted to do a thing where maybe there'd be a choreographed swimming thing, or we'd show a film, or there'd be a concert, or there'd be, you know, a little picnic, or you know, something else like a banquet, or, you know, it doesn't have to be just about swimming. It can be meet up swimming and then everyone comes together and food or drinks wine or something like that.
Well, whether it's Secret Cinema, Future Cinema, Secret Swimming, it sounds like there's never a dull moment in your life, sir.
Well, it's pretty manic, but it's fun. Just trying to keep it all together.
Fabien, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Fabien Riggle, founder of Future Cinema and Secret Swimming. You can find more information by going to secretcinema.org, futurecinema.co.uk, and secretswimming.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0166, and you'll find links to all three sites.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File program. It's the choice of 4 out of 5 dentists. The 5th dentist also listens, but that's just because he follows the crowd. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we will talk to one of the inventors of Wi-Fi. Plus, we have another edition of Book Banter with Stuart Nullman. And, of course, there is an Idiot of the Day coming your way. And lots more Stuff File news on a program heard on Stitcher Smart Radio. You know, at Stitcher, you can hear all your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, or any other mobile device you may have. And you have a choice of over 10,000 different shows to listen to. So, listen to Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And speaking of other shows on Stitcher, let me make a suggestion. If you like to hear interviews, and you like to hear music, and you like to hear interviews with musical people, may I suggest the Friends of Dan Music podcast? Dan Miles has had some amazing guests. Now, most recently, he had legendary guitarist Dick Dale on one of his shows. And one of my favorite programs was with composer Alf Clausen, who does all the music on The Simpsons. That was a great show. So, if you want to hear some thought-provoking musical interviews, check out the Friends of Dan Music podcast. You'll find the link on this week's What's On page on my website. And, of course, you'll also find it on Stitcher Smart Radio. Let's get back to the stuff, shall we? Well, I was talking a few moments ago before the break about some interesting elections taking place in the United States. Bizarre elections don't necessarily only take place in the U.S. Brazil, for instance, has a robust democracy, but with very few controls on what candidates may call themselves on the ballot. Now, among those running for offices this election season, according to a September New York Times dispatch from Rio de Janeiro, John Kennedy Abreu Sousa, Jimmy Carter Santarém Barroso, Lady Gaga, lady spelt with an I, Christ of Jerusalem, a MacGyver, which was spelt incorrectly, at least from the television show, 5 Batmans, and 2 James Bonds, and also 16 people whose name contains Obama. Now, apparently it's a marketing strategy, according to one city council candidate whose name is Geraldo Custodio, who apparently likes his chances better as Geraldo Wolverine. Wow, gee. Voting in Brazil is like living in a bizarro cartoon, or perhaps voting in Brazil is like starring in the movie Brazil. Eesh. And a man took himself to the emergency room in Auckland, New Zealand. The incident is the talk of the place, according to a spokesperson from the Auckland City Hospital. The eel was about the size of a decent sprig of asparagus. Eel, you say? Yes. Eels migrate upstreams as elvers to find suitable adult habitat, according to a local newspaper, who hopefully explained everything that you need to know about eels. Eels are secretive, nocturnal, and prefer habitats with plenty of cover. They hunt by smell rather than sight. Why am I telling you all this? Well, maybe, just maybe, that explains how the unidentified man ended up with the animal up his rear end. Doctors and nurses have come across people with strange objects that got stuck where they shouldn't be before, a hospital spokesperson explained. But an eel has to be a first. Well, you see, I'm thinking he was on his hovercraft and... Oh, never mind. That's a Monty Python reference in case those of you out there didn't get it. Moving right along, John Bowen, age 54, of Mendota, Illinois, called 911 after being shot in the hand. Now, according to Assistant LaSalle County State's Attorney Greg Sticka, John was crouched in a ditch repairing his bicycle tire. Preliminary reports say that Thomas Devan, age 46, apparently spotted John's black and white helmet sticking up over the top of the ditch and shot at it with his .22 rifle, hitting John in the hand. He was charged with one felony count of reckless discharge of a firearm. Now, why did he shoot? Well, Devan, who admitted he had been drinking, said he thought he was shooting at a skunk. There's a Pepe Le Pew reference in there somewhere, but I think there was only one skunk on the scene, and that was the one holding the rifle. Okay, over the past 10 years, New Zealand's Department of Internal Affairs has rejected a lot of baby name registrations. Names which connote a title top the list. Justice was number one with 29 denials. Royal-themed names come next, including King, Princess, Prince, Duke, and Majesty. No Messiah, Christ, Bishop, or Lucifer either. Yes, Kiwi parents tried to name a child Lucifer six times in the past decade. Other odd names that have been rejected include three, as in the Roman numeral three. Also, someone tried to register an asterisk, and I'm not saying the word asterisk, but the symbol asterisk. HQ was also denied, so was V8, and anal. Really? Someone wants to name their child anal. But tequila, miracle, and jury were allowed. I don't know why. Now, anyone that tries to call their kid anal may as well have the name Lucifer, because really, is it really worse than Lucifer? Do you want to call your kid out on the playground, "Oh, Lucifer, come in"? Or would you rather say, "Oh, anal, come in"? Yeah, it's kind of the lesser of two evils, isn't it? And there's the irony. Anyway, one more story in this section of the Stuff File program before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Rita Cheney, age 49, and her boyfriend, Charles Thompson, age 50, were playing dominoes when a dispute over Thompson's scorekeeping upset Cheney so much that she asked him to leave her apartment. Now, Thompson later told police he thought he could lie down on a couch until the tension eased, but he soon had a small swollen mark on his face where Cheney allegedly hit him with a fan. The police report says that after hitting Thompson, Cheney got a steak knife from her kitchen and started swinging it at him, cutting Thompson's hand. When officers arrived, Thompson was standing bleeding in the complex's common stairwell. They arrested Cheney, who said she was just trying to get Thompson to leave. Now, this all started over scoring and dominoes? I don't know. Anyway, I don't understand why she couldn't just keep score herself rather than violently settling the score. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Back in 1993, Dr. Alex Hills and his team of scientists came up with a way to communicate amongst themselves. We know that method of communication today as Wi-Fi. He has since written a book on the birth of the technology called Wi-Fi and the Bad Boys of Radio, Dawn of a Wireless Technology. Dr. Hills is on the line with us right now from Alaska. Hi, Alex.
Hi, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. I have to ask you right off the bat, the back end of the title of the book, The Bad Boys of Radio. Why The Bad Boys of Radio?
Well, some people always ask me if I'm one of the bad boys, and that's a good question. But the bad boys are actually the gremlins, the radio gremlins that always foul up radio communications. And I talk about that in the book as part of the whole story of how we put that first Wi-Fi network together, because in order to make it happen, we had to overcome all those tricks, all those things that the bad boys were doing to us.
Okay. Now, it was creating the initial Wi-Fi, was this one of those situations where necessity is the mother of invention? Was this something you guys needed for what you were doing in your daily lives?
That's exactly right. It was a small need, but it was nevertheless a need. We had some researchers who needed a small wireless network for their work, and so that was what led us to put that very first network together. Later on, we discovered that we were onto something pretty big.
Well, that was my other question. When did you have the aha moment that this wasn't something just for, you know, you and your team of scientists? This was something that would perhaps revolutionize technology or communications as we know it.
The people that showed me the light were my students. It's pretty interesting. We built that network for our researchers, and we actually put some restrictions in place, some software restrictions that would prevent quote-unquote unauthorized users from using it, because we were worried about getting too much usage on there and it might disrupt what we were trying to do. But a couple years into this, after we had the thing working pretty well, students started asking about it and saying, how can I get onto the wireless network? I'd say, I always had a stock answer, which was, I'm sorry, it's only for the researchers. But then I discovered that students are smart, and they figured out a way to hack their way onto the network. So I figured if they went to that much trouble, then there was probably a market for this. Usually, if you want to see the future, just look what young people are doing. Look at what students are doing. And so that was when I saw the future, and that was the aha moment.
Mm. Now, for those who don't even know, what exactly does Wi-Fi mean?
It's a question that's often asked, and one answer that you'll hear is that it stands for wireless fidelity, but the real answer is it was just a marketing term that was made up by the trade association. The technical term, and the one that I'm familiar with as an engineer, is there's a standard called IEEE 802.11, but the marketing people correctly surmised that that didn't really have a ring to it, so they came up with Wi-Fi. But it doesn't really mean anything. It sounds something like hi-fi, which was an old term for high-quality sound, just a marketing phrase that people dreamed up.
Well, it seems to have worked and seems to have stuck. What made you write the book, and who do you see your typical reader as being?
I think the typical reader for this book is not necessarily a techie. There are a lot of people who are interested in technology, but they come from many walks of life. So I wanted to put together a book that would tell the story of how technology innovation happens. And I think story is the key word there, because it's just telling a story. Most people like to hear a good story. And so it's the story of how this particular technology innovation happened. It's kind of representative of lots of technology innovation, but this is how this one happened.
And it's not exactly like a Thomas Edison kind of situation where you were looking to discover something. Like I said initially, it was something you kind of needed to do for your work, and it was a byproduct of whatever it was you were doing.
Exactly. And another difference between the Thomas Edison days and today is that for most of these current technology innovations, you really can't say that any one person invented it. I don't claim to be the inventor of Wi-Fi. There are just so many components to it that many people contribute. In this case, there were people in different universities and different companies. Everyone was contributing, but as far as we know, we're the first ones that actually built a network. And so that's why we say we built the first Wi-Fi network, but we're not necessarily the inventors. We contributed along with lots of other people.
Well, as someone who was on the ground floor of Wi-Fi, from your perspective, what has been the biggest evolution in Wi-Fi in the last few years? It's the application that surprises you the most.
Well, the application that's the most challenging is video. One of the things about the internet and networking is people just want to go faster and faster. So that has been the technology challenge, and it continues to be the technology challenge of wireless data. As far as a surprise, well, you know, there was the first surprise, which was that there was apparently a big market for this. But we had this kind of a futuristic space age idea that maybe someday people would be carrying around small devices that would be interconnected by wireless. In fact, one of our researchers back 20 years ago was starting to build those such devices. He had it down to the size of a Walkman, if you can remember a Walkman.
Right.
That was a really tiny computer. Now everyone's got a smartphone, and so our wildest dreams have been imagined, and then some.
There are those out there who might be concerned about what dangers Wi-Fi might pose. Do you concern yourself with those things? Are you worried about any kind of waves frying our brain or some of the other theories that are out there?
I'm not worried, and one reason I'm not worried is because almost all the studies that have looked at this have failed to find any health effects. But another one is that the dose of radio power that you get from a Wi-Fi station or a Wi-Fi terminal, a Wi-Fi unit, is far less than you get from cellular. You know what the biggest health effect of wireless is that people should worry about is using a cell phone while driving a car. That's the one that might affect your health.
For me, it's the people I see walking down the street, looking down and texting while they're crossing the street. That kills me.
Okay, that's another great example. But as far as the exposure to the radio signals, not really. I don't see a problem.
Now, have you been someone who's always been interested in radio-type communications? Were you a ham operator, for instance?
I was a ham operator. I'm talking about that a little bit in the book. what you would today call a geek, I guess.
Oh, I don't think so. I grew up in a time when there were a lot of ham operators. I'm just wondering, I'm talking to you in Alaska. Did you grow up in Alaska?
I came up here at a young age, interestingly, to build a telecommunication system up here. When I arrived in Alaska in 1970, most of the communities in the state had no communication system. We have about 300 villages that are scattered across a very wide area. Alaska is a really big state, and we have all these small villages. The only communication system that they had at that time was shortwave radio. And since we also have in Alaska something called the Aurora Borealis, or the Northern Lights, which is badly disruptive of shortwave communications, they really needed something better. So I came up to help to do something about that.
And that's why I asked the question, because Alaska is one of those places, to a certain degree like Canada, a very large area that's sparsely populated.
Very sparsely populated.
And rugged terrain.
The technology that we used to make all that happen was satellite communications. In fact, we built the first, as far as we know, it was the first widespread use of small satellite earth stations to serve all those far-flung locations. And that was back in the 70s.
Well, it's a fascinating story, and I'm sure, you know, with more and more people on this planet using Wi-Fi, it makes it an interesting trivia point, and certainly an interesting point in history to look back and see where and how it all began. The book is Wi-Fi and the Bad Boys of Radio, Dawn of a Wireless Technology. And Dr. Hills, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Dr. Alex Hills, author of Wi-Fi and the Bad Boys of Radio, Dawn of a Wireless Technology. You can check out his website at dralexhills.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0166, and you'll find links to Alex's site. You'll also find links to amazon.com and amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. A while back, I saw a poll that said that most people in the United States are more likely to know the names of characters on their favorite TV show than the name of even one judge on their state Supreme Court. Now, since our judges aren't on TV every day, I can understand why this is true. But considering that these judges can make as much public policy each year as the lawmakers in our state capitals, it should make us think twice. Since judges on our state's top appellate courts are so important, they're elected in most states, and many of them will be on our ballots in the general election this November. Let's be fair, judicial elections can be a mystery to many of us, but this election, let's change that. However you choose to vote, make it a point to get to know the men and women who are running to be a judge in your state. Because of the First Amendment, they can answer questions just like any other candidate can, so feel free to ask them their views on the issues that you care most about. It's your right. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
What are they saying about If the Rains Don't Cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nolman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And out in the distance, in the huddle, there he is, Stuart Nolman.
Well, thank you, Peter, but I get lost in a huddle in the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field.
There you go.
Where the warriors of autumn gather. I do a good John Facenda. Well, Peter, the reason we were doing all these football allusions is because on this edition of Book Banter, we're going to look at a book about pro football, because for over 90 years, American pro football has grown and evolved from a rough and tumble sport that resulted in fatalities to a rite of fall that has preoccupied every Sunday for its multitude of devoted fans from the preseason to the Super Bowl. It has created its share of great moments, innovative ways to play the game, and legendary players who ever put on a uniform and thrown, kicked, and caught a football.
Well, first of all, the football still has fatalities, but sadly now they're postponed.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you're right about that. Look at Alex Karras.
Exactly.
And like any revered professional sport, football has had its share of temples and shrines. There's, yes, the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field in Green Bay, Soldier Field in Chicago, and the Orange Bowl in Miami. However, Canton, Ohio, where the first professional football team was formed, they were the Canton Bulldogs, and the National Football League were established in 1920, is home of the professional football's most revered shrine, the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It preserves the sport's rich and gritty history, and every August, as the unofficial beginning of the NFL season, the Hall conducts a ceremony to enshrine a new group of football players, coaches, executives, and builders to honor their lasting significance to the game. So next year, the Pro Football Hall of Fame will celebrate the 50th anniversary of its opening. So to commemorate its golden anniversary of preserving and honoring the greatest names and the moments of the game, a wonderful, lavishly illustrated book has been published called The Pro Football Hall of Fame 50th Anniversary Book, Where Greatness Lives.
Ah, yes.
The book contains essays by 11 renowned sports writers, historians, and football experts, which gives interesting details to the more than century-long evolution of pro football, from the first pro football player, which that distinction belonged to William Pudge Heffelfinger, a former star guard for Yale University, who was paid a princely $500 to play a game for the Allegheny Athletic Association on November 12, 1892, to the formation of the NFL, to the acceptance of the forward pass, to the landmark 1958 NFL Championship game, to the triumph of Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints in Super Bowl 44. The essays are written with a great deal of fascinating stories without being drowned in too much information, and gives readers plenty of historical insight to football's drag-em-down, knock-em-out heritage. But what makes this book so much fun to leaf through are the illustrations. They are taken from the Hall of Fame's vast collection of artifacts, photos, documentation, and equipment that bring to life the history of pro football. There's plenty of jerseys of past and present, including the original Baltimore Colts jersey. The colors were green and silver back in the early 50s. Ancient equipment, including leather helmets from the 1910s and 20s that offered very little protection, if any. Game football, such as the ball used in the 58 NFL Championship game, which the Colts beat the Giants in overtime. Unusual items, such as the piece of yellow coil from Lambeau Field's unique electrical field heating system, which failed before the 1967 Ice Bowl game. And there's plenty of photos of many of NFL's greats in action over the years, such as Jim Thorpe, Red Grange, Slingin', Sammy Baugh, Don Hudson, Johnny Unitas, Bart Starr, Roger Staubach, Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, and Reggie White. So the Pro Football Hall of Fame 50th Anniversary book is a golden volume about pro football's permanent shrine of its greatest players, its greatest coaches, its greatest innovators, and its greatest games. So whether you want to start a conversation, solve an argument, or even if you can't make the trip to Canton, this book is a must-have for every football fan.
And the book is?
The Pro Football Hall of Fame 50th Anniversary book, and it's published by Grand Central Publishing, and it's, if you can afford it, but it's $38.99, so it's not so bad.
And for people who are getting into the football mood because they've raced out, bought this book, and said, gee, I want to know more, I want to know more, they're like the football equivalent of Oliver.
Well, I'm not going to say, you know, I'm not going to be like, more? What? I'm going to say, here's what I can recommend to you. Two books, actually. One is called When Pride Still Mattered. It's an excellent biography of Vince Lombardi by David Moranis, who's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. It's the ultimate book about the ultimate NFL coach and how he instilled a lot of pride in his players and in the game itself. And speaking of Green Bay, this is an excellent book that was published almost about 45 years ago called Instant Replay by former Green Bay Packer player Jerry Kramer. He republished it after he retired from the Packers in 68. And it did for professional football what Balfour did for Major League Baseball.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. And yeah. When the book was published in 1969, it was a huge bestseller because not many people got to go behind the locker room with the Packers, especially the Vince Lombardi era. So excellent book.
Excellent, sir. And how can people find you, Mr. Stuart Nolman, if they want to? I'm assuming, you know, it's not a situation where it's a restraining order or a warrant or something of the effect. But, you know, they just want to find you.
Well, if I'm not on America's Most Wanted, you can read me in the West End Times on paper or online at www.westendtimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stu.
You're welcome, Peter. And ha, ha.
Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of the Stuff File program. We do, of course, have an idiot of the day, but before we get there, a few more Stuff File stories for you. Christopher Watts, age 45, was dumbfounded when police in Akron, Ohio, told him he was under arrest. What for? Breaking and entering. Officers say they found him at 2 a.m. using a sledgehammer on the wall of a convenience store so that he could, quote, get the rest of that beer, unquote. He also told officers he thought the store needed to have a drive-up window. How can I be charged with breaking and entering? Watts retorted when told of the charge. I didn't even get in yet. Well, you know, his logic is somewhat flawed, but then again, he'll have time to figure that out. Actually, he'll do time and figure that out. A city prosecutor in New Orleans was given a summons a few weeks ago after a joint allegedly fell out of his pocket in court while he was chatting with a police officer. Assistant City Attorney Jason Cantrell, it was in Orleans Parish Magistrate, when a marijuana cigarette fell out of his pocket and onto the floor. A police spokesman said Cantrell had been talking to an officer at the time. Sources painted a comical picture of the incident, saying a pair of cops glanced at the joint on the ground, then at each other, before making arguably the easiest caller in the annals of police work. Officers were seen chuckling as their colleagues led Cantrell out of the courtroom at 4:15 p.m. to write him up. Cantrell, who was 43, was reportedly cited and let go under a city policy for low-level marijuana cases. Police say Cantrell was a first-time offender. But it seems that this case of the Butterfingers has had far-reaching consequences for the hapless attorney. Cantrell has resigned from his city post, and his wife, who is currently running for New Orleans City Council, has been forced to apologize for him. Cantrell had reportedly practiced law in New Orleans for 17 years and had been working a case in his capacity as a private defense attorney when the incident occurred. According to the website Above the Law, a person familiar with the incident had some choice words for New Orleans city employees in the aftermath of Cantrell's alleged mishap. A tipster who reported the incident to Above the Law says he has suspected that more than 50% of the city, and its employees specifically, are at any given time either stoned, drunk, or on a three-hour lunch. Couldn't you just picture that joint falling out of his pocket and then Jason just looking up at the ceiling and whistling as if nothing happened? Yeah. Anyway, a 23-year-old Virginia woman met a man she knew as Tony Moore through an online dating service. You can see where this is going already, can't you? When they met in person, he told her that he had given her a false name because of his position in the Special Forces and gave her his real name, Navy Commander Michael Ward, age 43. I think to most intelligent, forward-thinking women, this would be a tip-off, but let's continue with the story, shall we? As their relationship continued, she became pregnant. That's when she received a tragic email from Ward's email address from someone named Bob. "He asked me to contact you if this ever happened," the email said. "I am extremely sorry to tell you that he's gone. We tried everything we could to save him. I cannot say more. I am sorry it has to be this way." The woman went to Moore's Virginia home to pay respects, only to discover that he was married with children and had been reassigned to command the USS Pittsburgh, a submarine based in Connecticut. Yes, he was quite alive. She notified the Navy, and Moore, very much alive, was relieved of command and reassigned to administrative duties. Yes. You know, there are special forces, and then there are really special forces. And a man who completed the Baltimore Marathon in 2 hours, 46 minutes, and 58 seconds in flip-flops said he will seek to enter the Guinness Book of World Records. Keith Lavasseur said he was ecstatic to complete all 26.2 miles of the race under his goal of 3 hours, and he is planning to see if his feat qualifies for the Guinness Book of World Records. "I knew it was all about maintaining a very efficient and balanced stride," Keith told Runner's World. "There were times when my feet and ankles would get tired from maintaining a more rigid stride than I might otherwise have, and I would start landing more on the outside of my foot and cause my heel to slip off the sandal. It only happened a few times, and when it did, it would refocus my concentration on my stride and posture." Yeah, well, bully for you, Keith. I have to confess to a certain bias here. When someone asks me what the most annoying noise on the planet is, I always say, without hesitation, the sound of flip-flops. Just drives me nuts. Anyway, you know what time it is, boys and girls? Yes, it's time once again for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff off presents the Idiot of the Day.
The Sovereign Bank on Meridian Street in East Boston, Massachusetts, was closed for Columbus Day. But a patrolman noticed a man standing at its door wearing a hoodie, a knit hat, latex gloves, and dark glasses. So he approached and asked the man why he was trying to go in. The man said he wasn't. Nevertheless, citing the suspect's nervous behavior, the cop conducted a search. The police report said he found in the man's pockets a pillowcase and the note reading, "Give me all the money, no die pack." Carlos Leger, age 39, was charged with attempted, unarmed bank robbery. Now, if you were planning to rob a bank, why wouldn't you bother to check banking hours or in fact that it was a legal holiday? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0166. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0166. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download, we're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. No animals were harmed in the production of this program, except, of course, the tasty ones. Good night and pass the paprika.